Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Armin Mavash, MD, about the FDA approval of Surfsphere's Y90 resin microspheres for the treatment of patients with unresectable hepatocellular carcinoma. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Mavash discussed the significance of this approval, key clinical findings that led to the approval, and how multidisciplinary collaboration is crucial for implementing radioembolization in practice.
In the past, there have been multiple prior studies for Y90 and in the HCC realm. And unfortunately, the prior studies up to this point have not used essentially more advanced and standardized dosimetry treatment planning. There was no centralized planning. People were doing their own planning for these procedures in these multi-center trials. And one thing that we realized that when we were planning this trial, which is very important, is that we have a standardized approach that everyone is adhering to and using a more advanced method that has not been previously used in any prospective study in the United States, which was the method is called partition dosimetry treatment planning. So there's no study previously in the US that has ever done that. There was one study done in France that did randomize patients to the older standardized approach to this more advanced approach. And that study demonstrated benefit for patients. But it's never been done in the US. And obviously for the indication for the use in the US, we felt like it's very important to include this method of dose treatment planning in the study, because then that would be considered part of the IFU for the device once it is accepted for use, once it's FDA approved. So the advent of better technology, we were having virtual meetings with every site. So after, we had obviously introductory meetings, but obviously different discussions once the sites were open. But once the sites had planned these treatments, then we would have virtual meetings with them. We would be able to upload images to the cloud, and we would do virtual meetings with each site once they had done the planning portion, that then we would agree upon a standardized method of treatment. And this has been around, honestly, radiation oncologists have been ahead of the curve for us compared to us in their prior treatment plans when they do multi-centered studies. But in Y90, this has never been done. So for us, it's like a huge breakthrough and really this is possible. And so we met with all sites. We treated all 100 patients, had a, personalized treatment plan based on myself and my co-PI, Dr. Kapadath, who's a physicist here. And we would meet with each investigator, each site, and with the CRO, which is the clinical research team that was obviously managing the study. And we would go over each patient. We would go over their treatment planning, come up with a unified treatment plan, and then they would execute the plan. And then on top of that, we would verify that what was planned was actually executed in this study. Again, never done in any other prior study. So once they got their treatments done, they would actually get post-treatment imaging, either PET CT or SPECT CT, which are two standard methods. And then we would verify that what was planned was delivered as it was planned and was executed as we had planned. And we did demonstrate that there were two patients that actually the plan was not adhered to due to technical issues on the day of the treatment. And part of the study actually allowed for retreatment within 30 days, which we did for those two patients. And both of those patients had complete responses in the response assessment. So it showed that, centralized treatment planning plus verification can yield to, honestly, the best. I've never seen a study. I mean, honestly, I was really amazed with the preliminary results of 98.5% response rate and a 92% complete response rate in this patient population, which was obviously much better than we expected. But obviously, being very meticulous, and I'm very grateful that, we had great collaborators, worked with a great team at Surtex, also the Bright Research, and all the investigators, right? Everyone worked together to execute this study as well as possible. And the interesting thing is, obviously, is that in all, having 98.5% response rate in a clinical trial it almost seems unreal, right? It seems like it's too good to be true. And I'm a little bit grateful that we didn't have 100% response rate. Then I think people wouldn't believe us to say that we had 100% response rate. It seems, a little bit kind of far-fetched, because you always have to be a little bit of a skeptic. But You know, all the imaging was reviewed centralized at the ACR, blinded independent reviewers, also very unique. So all the imaging for the patients were sent blinded to the ACR, which was the independent third party that reviewed all the imaging. So these were reviewed by radiologists not affiliated with the study in any way. So again, all these different things kind of demonstrate the applicability of this methodology, the reproducibility. And then if you need to retreat somebody, we obviously retreated patients that needed to be retreated. And the results just speak for themselves, because then the numbers are the numbers, 98.5% ORR, 92% CR rates. And we had no tumor progression in any patient at 1 year follow-up, which also was outstanding, right? So no patients progressed at the area of prior treatments. So again, all those things are kind of, you know, exceeded our expectations. We're very, obviously very happy. And hopefully that this trial will demonstrate that all future studies can be conducted this way, right? You have to do, it's essentially a feasibility that can we do centralized planning, which we demonstrated we can. And then all future trials using advanced dosimetry treatment planning can now be conducted similar to what we have, you know, what we've done. And honestly, our goal, once the final results are in, is to then go educate people, right? I mean, I can't, just doing the 100 patients is not enough. Like, we need to go educate physicians all over the US and outside the US of this is the way, this is how we did it, and this is how you can do it at your site. Because stopping with a study is not enough. There's a huge education component that we also have to execute on behalf of our specialty and physicians that are specialty, and then future patients that need this treatment. The mechanism of action is radiation therapy. And so it is a transarterial therapy that obviously interventional radiologists have done for many years. Historically, chemoembolization was the primary choice for treatment of HCC. And there's a recent patient paper actually from Salem et al. In 2024 demonstrating that now actually radioembolization in the U.S. has superseded the use for early HCC, for transplant-eligible HCC, and now has superseded chemoembolization. And so there have been a couple of randomized trials in the recent past that demonstrated the benefit of radioembolization over chemoembolization, and now the use of chemoembolization has come down, while the use of radioembolization, obviously due to all these years of study, showed benefit. So for patients that need tumor control waiting for transplant, there's always a wait list for patients getting transplanted in the United States, right? So usually the minimum wait to get listed is, once you get listed, is 6 months in order for you to get your exception points. And so during that time, you need to get tumor control. And historically, that was done with chemoembolization. And there's been a paradigm shift with all the data that's come out. So patients that are potentially transplant eligible or need even potentially downstaging, right? That wasn't our focus on this study, but we demonstrated that no patients progressed at 1 full year. So once you get treated up to a year, now we only follow the patients by imaging for 1 year, but clearly it demonstrates that you have 1 year durable response rate, right? And in the, you know, possibility that people do recur at the site of tumor, you can always retreat these patients. People can get retreatment of Y90 again to, again, maintain their transplant eligibility. Or, you know, the patients that couldn't, that historically chemoembolization was not as successful with. So I think for patients that are transplant eligible, I think it's a paradigm shift that if you're transplant eligible in the U.S., realistically, you should be getting radioembolization. Now, obviously, there's some financial issues with radioembolization. It is definitely, as a single treatment, is more expensive than chemoembolization, but the efficacy is now demonstrated to be better. In Texas, I can speak for Texas, Medicaid patients are ineligible for radioembolization, but in other states, Medicaid patients are. But otherwise, it is in the NCCN guidelines. It is in the BCLC guidelines as well for treatment of patients. And obviously now, Sirspheres was FDA approved for the treatment of HCC in both earlier and intermediate stage patients. So we did treat patients with multifocal disease, not just solitary lesions. So again, getting patients a transplant, potentially getting patients to surgery that were not eligible for surgery, maybe at some point by downstaging them to get. And also you're looking to make sure that patients don't, you know, if you have a solitary lesion, taking a patient to surgery early, you may realize that, oh, maybe the patient's kind of at the tip of the iceberg and they develop new tumors very quickly. So some sites like to look for a period that patients have a tumor response without development of new tumors, right? Because if you do a surgery and 2 months later they have new tumors, and that surgery may have not been of any benefit at the end. So we've demonstrated a year tumor control, which is outstanding. And so if you need good local tumor control, excellent local tumor control, and also patients, when they do progress outside the field, can get retreated, right? You can get treatment again. You can get ablation. You can get Y90 again. Again, there's many other local therapies that can be done. And patients eventually that don't get transplanted will likely go on to systemic therapies. And that's obviously an option for patients to go get systemic therapies, because you've preserved their liver function after this treatment. So I think there's a lot to be taken away. But again, for excellent local tumor control, that honestly has not been demonstrated, is kind of the best demonstration that's been in any study in the past. We did it here, obviously, in a multi-center prospective study. Most adverse events were grade 1 and 2, which are acceptable. We had, I believe, 4 grade 3 adverse events in this study, 2 of which I think were abdominal pain, 1 of which was nausea, and 1 was a patient got radiation-induced liver disease. And so looking at abdominal pain as an adverse event, the problem is, you know, if you even get hospitalized one night due to abdominal pain, that's considered a grade 3 adverse event. And again, if you're hospitalized for nausea, again, that's a grade 3 adverse event. The one patient that got radiation-induced liver disease, looking back at that patient, we do recognize that the planned area of treatment and the actual executed area of treatment did not match each other. And there is some explanation of why that patient ended up developing radiation-induced liver disease from my perspective, looking retrospectively at what was done and what was executed. But again, very well tolerated. Essentially, 4 patients had 3 grade 3 adverse events, 3 of which were reversible, and the radiation-induced liver disease patient, eventually their liver function improved to some extent. And so again, most of the adverse events were temporary. The significant adverse events, we had no patients have any grade 5 adverse events or grade 4 adverse events from the study treatment itself. So again, no deaths from the study itself. People died for other reasons, but not from the study treatment itself. So it's at a full year follow-up patients, it was a very safe. And the safety data comes from all 100 patients. So we demonstrated in all 100 patients that it's a very safe treatment with no grade 4 or grade 5 adverse events out to a year. I work in a tertiary care cancer center, right? So we do a lot of multidisciplinary care in our practice. And I think that is the key to implementing this therapy effectively in all practices, right? And there's definitely data showing that the multidisciplinary care for cancer treatment obviously improves patient survival, patient outcomes. And so the key is obviously interventional radiologists that are applying this therapy, interacting with their hepatologists, interacting with their oncologists, and then applying the things that we've learned from this study in their own practices. And that's honestly my goal, is that I'm going to go out and educate people so that they can apply these things to their practices. But we have to interact with our, I think historically interventional radiologists kind of sat in their cocoon and did lots of procedures, but it's evolved as a practice, and especially in the last 10 years. And so we interact a great deal with the clinicians, lots of multidisciplinary care. And I think that is the key to applying this therapy in, you know, a myriad of patients that can really benefit from this therapy. So, you know, reach out to I have very close relations with my oncologist. So obviously the oncologist reaching out to their local interventional radiologist to get, you know, to incorporate this therapy in their paradigm of care.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.